This is News in Notes. I'm Tony Cox. This week, the blogosphere is buzzing with holiday spirit and a lot more, from Barack Obama and hip-hop to Black Santas and Kwanzaa. On today's Bloggers Roundtable, we've got political analyst Lenny McAllister. He blogs for several sites, including Hip Hop Republican, The Root, and AOL Black Voices. Felicia Harvey, editor of Black Politics on the Web, and LaRue Lewis, assistant professor of sociology and Black Studies at the City College of New York. He blogs at UptownNotes.com. Welcome, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
It was a creed written into the founding documents that declared the destiny of the nation. Yes, we can. It was whispered by slaves and abolitionists.
The new president is already having an impact in the music world, as evidenced by songs like this one from Will.i.am. The website The Daily Voice published an article recently about Barack Obama's popularity in the hip-hop community under the headline, "Obama Won, Now Pull Up Your Pants." The essay argues that some very prominent rappers like Young Jeezy, Rick Ross, and T.I. have begun to change their tune in response to Mr. Obama's victory, and that they've set aside their message of drugs and guns in favor of a more political tune. Felicia, let me begin with you. Do you think that Obama's election will have a substantive impact on rap music?
I think it'll have an impact. It's not going to completely change things overnight. I do enjoy being able to hear a greater diversity of topics and themes in different rap songs. We're still going to have that negativity. The negativity is still going to exist. But I think what will happen now is that we'll hear a broader range of things spoken about in rap. I love the fact that I can hear Yes We Can on the radio and it's popular and that young people are embracing it. And hopefully they'll continue to embrace more positive messages. But it's up to us to continue to push those positive messages and make sure that they remain profitable as well, so we can have that balance and not just hear about the guns and the bling bling and all that in rap.
What do you say, Lenny?
Well, I think that what we're going to have to look at is the Obama phenomenon within the hip-hop culture. Is it going to be a trend or a movement? I mean, everybody has been saying, yes, we can, including the hip-hoppers out there. But we need them to be able to say, yes, we will. And then after a while, we need them to be able to say, yes, we have, meaning that something has gotten done. Right now, it's trendy to have Obama shirts, Obama paraphernalia, and to be on board with Barack Obama becoming the president. But we need this to be a life-changing event where it actually changes a plethora of lives, not just American history. That's where the key is going to be in with the next, not just the people talk about 100 days when it comes to politics, but for Black America, it's going to be the next 2 years, next 5 years. What type of impact is it going to have? What type of route is it going to take?
Well, LaRue, Reverend Al Sharpton recently said, quote, "You cannot be using the B word, the N word, the H word when you have Barack Obama redefining overnight the image that Black people want to have. Here is the greatest political victory in the history of Black America," he says, "and the thug rappers cannot come near it. They will have to change or become irrelevant." Is he right?
I think Reverend Sharpton is absolutely wrong on that approach. The day of the election, I heard people using the B and the N and the H word on the train, right? I think people understand that this is a moment where we engage politics, electoral politics, and we hope for a candidate. But that doesn't mean everybody's life shifts instantaneously. Reverend Sharpton's had an attempt to try to, quote unquote, clean up hip hop, make people pull up their pants and not cuss. But hip hop fundamentally is a music form that really lives and thrives off of resistance. So we have to resist that which is always accessible or acceptable, but also do it in more complicated ways. So I think Reverend Sharpton is definitely off the mark on this.
Let's go into this a little bit deeper. During the presidential campaign, it was widely publicized that Obama's camp denounced rapper Ludacris for what it termed, quote, outrageously offensive lyrics in his song Politics, Obama Is Here. Here's a clip.
"You never should have doubted him. With a slot in the president's iPod, Obama shouted him. Said I handle my biz and I'm one of his favorite rappers. We'll give Luda a special pardon if I'm ever in the slammer. Better yet, put me in office. Make me your vice president. Hillary hated on you, so that bitch is irrelevant. Now Jesse talking slick and apologizing for..."
Now, similarly, Young Jeezy's recently released song, My President Is Black, has become a sort of anthem for some people while spawning anger and embarrassment in others. Here's a clip of that song.
"Tell him I'm doing fine, Obama for mankind. We ready for damn change, so y'all let the man shine. Stunting on Martin Luther, feeling
like a king. Guess this is what he meant when he said that he had a dream.
All right, now, Felicia, to follow on LaRue's point, one of the bloggers that we talk about has written, quote, "Are you kidding me? Hoes with no clothes and thugged out images are not going anywhere. All the newsstands have all the hip hop magazines with naked black women exploited and sexualized, proudly displayed. Nothing will change." What do you say?
I wouldn't go so far as to say nothing will change. He has a point. And like LaRue said, it's not going to change overnight. And as long as the hip-hop artists have a right to express themselves, they're going to continue to express themselves in whatever fashion they see fit. So he's right. I don't think it's going to go away overnight. I don't think it's going to go away ever, honestly. But I do think that we'll have more positivity, and maybe we'll get to a point where young people will look and they'll be able to choose between some of the negative messages they're receiving and some of the positive messages they're receiving, and choose to be more receptive to the positive ones.
All right, let's go on to another topic, because there's a lot of things that are changing as a result of the election of Barack Obama. On the blog Jossip, there was an article that talked about the big three black leaders who need to go. That's in quotes, namely Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan, and Al Sharpton, according to this blog. LaRue, what do you think? Do we need to put some of our older black leaders out to pasture now? Is it a new day?
I don't think we need to put them out to pasture in the sense of now that Obama's been elected, we have a black leader. Both Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and Louis Farrakhan represent a grassroots approach, and the grassroots have always been there to challenge mainstream politics. When Sean Bell gets murdered and the police get acquitted, Barack Obama says, "Okay, everybody accept the verdict. Justice has been spoken." Whereas folks like Al Sharpton stand up and say, "Police brutality is not right. Killing an unarmed man is not right." So these black leaders that many people criticize are actually the folks who are fighting for the most disenfranchised and poor amongst our people.
Do you think, Lenny, that we're looking at perhaps a generational shift from older to younger African Americans in terms of leadership?
Yes, I think not only are we looking at it, but we absolutely needed it. If you look at these three leaders, none of them are under the age of 55. You look at the civil rights movement, you look at when we rebelled as slaves, and everything leading up to this point of time, the leaders were young. They were under 35. They had energy, they had life, and they had vision for the future. Now we're being led, as far as black leaders go, with these three. You're talking about Louis Farrakhan, who's over the age of 75. You're talking about Jesse Jackson Sr., who talked about cutting Obama's genitalia off. And then you're looking at Al Sharpton, who has a shady past in and of himself, regardless of the good work that they have done. Every significant movement in the world, even if you look at the greatest generation here in America, it was World War II. Those were not led by just 60-year-olds that were running the war. That was a war and a generation that was crafted by people that fought the war, then came home and helped build out suburbia and everything else. In black America, we need young black leaders that are going to stand up and take the place of these three leaders. They do need to step aside, in my opinion, and hand over the mantle. The problem is our greatest generation as black people has been the civil rights leaders, but now they are of age and it's time for them to pass on their wisdom, something that they have not done effectively, onto younger leaders who are going to take up that mantle and move us forward, grabbing the hand of people such as President-elect Barack Obama to help black America and subsequently America move forward from here.
Well, Felicia, one of the things that, in addition to the generational question, is the gender question. The three leaders mentioned here are all men. And Condoleezza Rice in the Bush administration was the most prominent African-American woman in government. How do you see the change, if at all, coming through Barack Obama's presidency for women as far as leadership roles in the black community?
Well, I definitely hope it's a situation where black women leaders are in a position where they're able to affect more change. We've always been leaders. We haven't always received the kudos as necessary, even going back as far as the civil rights movement with the Big Seven, how a lot of times Dorothy Height didn't get the credit that she deserved in her efforts with the civil rights movement. I hope that with change comes a more gender acceptance, because black women are out there and we're doing the thing. And it becomes an issue of a lot of issues that affect African Americans also affect women too. And I think we're in a position now where black women can take more of a role of leadership. With a lot of the appointments that President-elect Obama has made with a lot of black women to more prominent positions, I think we will be in a position to make more effective change.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Farai Tadea. With me on today's roundtable are Lenny McAllister, who blogs for several sites, including Hip Hop Republican, The Root, and AOL Black Voices. Felicia Harvey, who you just heard, who is the editor of Black Politics on the Web. And LaRue Lewis, who blogs at UptownNotes.com. All right. Let's talk about this for a moment. This has to do with hair. Earlier this month, the Boston court decided that a Rastafarian man who refused to shave his beard or cut his dreadlocks for his job at Jiffy Lube can sue the company for religious discrimination. Now, the Rastafarian faith urges followers to let their hair grow unbridled to express a oneness with nature. So here's what one blogger says. For the first time since this hair politics discussion started, I think the employer might be right in asking the employee to get rid of the dreads. Jiffy Lube is not an office building. It's an auto shop, meaning it contains a lot of whirring machinery that could easily snag a dread. Now, I don't know if any of you have dreads. So, Lenny, what do you think? What do you think about this?
I don't have dreads, and there's a point to be said about the office building, and there's two sides of this coin. It's a very interesting one because one aspect of it is Jiffy Lube has an image that they want to protect when it comes to how they address their consumers, and if that offends or affects how they can address their consumers as far as their brand name, they have a right to at least ask for that. And then there's also a safety issue, even though you can sign a waiver to get around that. Yet at the same time, if you go to a Jiffy Lube, let's just be real, I mean, there are people in there with tattoos or people in there with different types of earrings and piercings and everything else. At auto body shops, you're still talking about mechanics. So if somebody's keeping hair because of their faith, if you look at the Nazarites, if you go back even to the Bible, they never cut their hair. They never drank wine or anything else along those lines. So there is a religious foundation to what this case seems to have to it. So there's definitely going to be an interesting interpretation of the law and of what rights the company has and what rights the individual has when it comes to this. It's very peculiar.
LaRue, black hair is a hot topic in the U.S., has been for a long time. Some say this lawsuit has more to do with making a statement rather than religious discrimination. You buy that?
I think it's both. It's a statement and religious discrimination. I have had dreadlocks and been told when applying for jobs, if you want this job, you have to cut it. So the ways in which Jiffy Lube shifted the policy, it's important that we see that people are making decisions to eliminate certain folks, right? Ask him to be a second-class employee. We have separate but equal facilities that you could work in. And it's also important that he's bringing this case and continuing to fight it. Even though some folks look and deny and say, well, he should just cut his hair, we don't want to make people compromise their personal beliefs. Most Rastafarians actually keep their hair covered. So the whole question of it's dangerous and he's working around machinery, he's been negotiating with his hair for a long time and he's done it successfully. So we have to make sure that corporations and companies create cultures that are acceptable for diverse populations.
All right, we've only got a couple of minutes left for this edition of Bloggers. And Felicia, I want to talk about another person who has long hair, Santa Claus. And yesterday on this show, we had a very interesting discussion about black Santa Clauses and Latino Santa Clauses and Asian Santa Clauses versus white ones. Is this something that in your own experience you've had to deal with as far as either your children or relatives or being interested or concerned or not concerned about whether Santa Claus at the mall is black?
Well, I don't have any kids, but I think it's great that we're getting to the point where we're diversifying Santa Claus in the mall. I know growing up, I was familiar with the black Santa Claus, but the black Santa Claus is only at the black bookstore or other black establishments. So it's great that now black Santa Claus has been let out. They let him in the mall. It's interesting that we're talking about it now, but I think there has been a trend shifting towards having more black Santa Clauses, more Asian, more Hispanic Santa Clauses for the past couple of years. And it's at a point where you almost have to do that. We live in a multicultural society, so there's no reason why we should expect our Santa Claus or our superheroes or other fantasy characters to only remain one particular race.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We do talk about Santa Claus a lot, and we're tomorrow, well, actually not tomorrow, but on the day after Christmas, we get into the beginning of Kwanzaa. There's not as much talk about Kwanzaa, is there, Lenny?
No, not as much, because there's still a knowledge gap when it comes to Kwanzaa. There's not the economic stimulus to talk about Kwanzaa either. But truth be told, the difference, I think, between Christmas season and Kwanzaa is something that we should be carrying around all year long. Christmas, because it's been commercialized, gets into the snowflakes and the snowman and the gifts and everything else, where Kwanzaa, if we can really take, and this is an opportune time with Barack Obama becoming the next president of the United States, if we can take the principles of Kwanzaa, celebrate that African holiday now, and let it transcend how we live our lives moving forward. Everything that we touched on during this segment, from how hip-hoppers will move forward to how we address each other to even things such as having more women leadership in Black America, all of those things can come about quite easily because Barack Obama was able to break the glass ceiling.
I'm not going to put you guys on blast by asking you to name the seven elements of Kwanzaa, but I'm going to share them with you and with the audience. There's unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So we've got a Black Santa Claus in some places. We've got Kwanzaa. We've got Christmas. We've got Hanukkah. I think I've covered all the bases. And if I didn't, have a happy whatever it is that you celebrate during this holiday
season. You missed the most important one, which is we have a Black president-elect. That's the best thing about this Christmas season.
Well, there you go. We've been talking with Felicia Harvey, editor of Black Politics on the Web. She was at member station WUSF in Tampa. Political analyst Lenny McAllister, he blogs for several sites, including Hip Hop Republican, The Root, and AOL Black Voices. He was at member station WFAE in Charlotte, North Carolina. And LaRue Lewis, assistant professor of sociology and Black studies at the City College of New York. His blog is UptownNotes.com. He was at our New York studios. Now, you can find links to their blogs and to ours at NPRNewsAndNotes.org. And the conversation doesn't stop there. Our online series, Speak Your Mind, gives you a chance to sound off on the issues you care about and to find out how. Go to our blog, nprnewsandviews.org, and click on Speak Your Mind. Thanks, everybody.